Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Hello and welcome to Manx Radio's election constituency debate. I'm Beth Espy. There are now less than 2 weeks until the Isle of Man goes to the polls, and today I'm talking to the three candidates from the constituency of Michael who are looking for your vote on September the 29th. We'll be hearing from them in a moment, but first, here's John Moss.
The constituency of Michael forms with Ayr and Glenfaber Glenfarber the northwest coastline of the island, with Peel in there a little bit as well, of course. Not much is certain in politics except that Michael will have a new member on September the 29th. That's with the retirement of long-standing MHK David Cannon. Castletown is the other political certainty in that regard. So, who will row the boat ashore in Michael? Well, inside the constituency is Michael Sheeding. Sheeding was an area that had to provide a warship and crew if unfriendly powers came rushing up the beach. And over the last few years, the local member has gone rushing down that beach on a number of occasions to repel invaders. And that earned Mr. Cannon term after term in the post. And that beach itself is an area of worry to Michael, because each year there's more of it and less of Michael. Erosion is nibbling away at the constituency. The debate has been over whether to build coastal defences to protect the village of Kirkmichael or let nature re-sculpture the coastline. But that could mean the coastal road outside Kirkmichael between Michael and Peel suddenly having a very sharp dip down to join the Bucket and Spey Brigade, and the very steep rise back up again then, and that could happen quite suddenly. Erosion, though, has not been the cause célèbre this last 5 years that it was before then. But it could be in the future, but something that will be is the plan by local developers to build 100 new homes next to the village. An exhibition was on display this week. We await the commissioner's views of that. What will the new MHK's views be? Douglas Road Corner in Michael is the feature bend on the TD course through the constituency, and that leads to the question of speed through the village. It will, one suspects, take up a substantial corner in the next member's mailbag or emails or text or Twitter. Health facilities have featured large, and doubtless that debate will continue. The argument is, in Michael, doctor won't see you now, or at the very least the facilities on offer do need to be upgraded. Jerby is the constituency's northern capital, and it's capital that needs to be invested in that community. That goes the argument. Of course, in the last few years the prison has been moved there. A good thing, a bad thing, undecided? Well, it's not moving away now. The local stores in Jerby closed recently. Moves are underway to get a permanent replacement. Roads. The winter weather created a lot of holes in northern roads, but then that's an island-wide problem. The parish church of St. Michael in Kirkmichael Village contains a large collection of Manx Norse crosses. What our candidates will be after is a few more of those crosses next to their name on September 29th. Beth, the floor is yours.
John Moss. Well, now it's time to hear from the three candidates standing in Michael. They are Alfred Cannon, a businessman and son of Michael's recently retired MHK, taxi firm managing director Paul Heavey, and businessman David Talbot. We'll hear from them individually, first of all. They'll each be able to speak for up to 2 minutes, uninterrupted, about whatever they choose. This is done in alphabetical order, so we'll start with Alfred Cannon.
Good evening. Over the past 100 years, the Cannon family name has been synonymous with public service to the island, with my great-grandfather, grandfather and father serving the people of the Isle of Man and the constituency of Michael in one form or another. But it is not a sense of tradition or history that brings me here tonight. Although these are qualities I admire and treasure, it is the desire to seek a more credible and effective government that has motivated me. I owe much to this wonderful island. My education, many friendships, successful business ventures and the sense of well-being and freedom that the island encourages. These are sentiments that many of you will share and enjoy with your families today, and I want to ensure that the island continues to offer these remarkable opportunities that make up our overall quality of life. During the course of my campaign, many of you have raised a number of serious concerns about the economy, the increasing costs of living, and the underperformance of national government. I share your concerns, and I do not underestimate the challenges facing the Isle of Man, which I regret to say are substantial. It is abundantly clear that the Isle of Man needs firm leadership and a clear strategy to deal with the issues that currently face us. The current government has failed to deliver when it matters, failed to deliver at the negotiating table, and failed to maintain effective management and control of public finances. There are many tough decisions facing the new government. The island requires men and women experienced in life, men and women of character and determination, and men and women not afraid to make the toughest of decisions in the interests of all. I believe my wide experience of life, knowledge and acumen will be of benefit, not just to the people of Balaf, Jerby and Kirkmichael, but to the island as a whole, and I ask for your vote on Thursday the 29th of September.
Alfred Cannon, thank you. We now turn to Paul Heavey.
Thank you, Beth. When I first mentioned to my wife that I was thinking of standing in this year's general election, she replied by saying, "You do whatever you want, dear." Now, a bit of advice. Apparently, when your wife says you do whatever you want, she doesn't actually mean it. In fact, I was almost sure what she really meant to say was, "Oh, that's wonderful news. I'm 100% behind you." Thankfully, I seem to have talked around. Now that the hard bit is done, I'm faced with the slightly daunting task in persuading another couple of thousand people to come out and vote for me. Therefore, over the past few weeks, I have been cheekily turning up uninvited with varying degrees of apprehension on people's doorsteps. Thankfully, everyone has been kind enough to speak to me, and many have shared their views on local issues, national issues, and in some cases, very personal issues. It's fair to say that some of the things we have talked about have left me with a slightly different view on life. So maybe I've learned to listen a bit better now than I did when I first broke the news to my long-suffering wife. Meanwhile, I think we all understand the gravity of our government's economic situation and the likely effect it will have on all of us, which is why I plead with the electorate to consider their vote carefully at this election. I fear that issues of national importance will dominate the work undertaken by the House of Keys, and while there is no disputing the seriousness of the situation, I want to ensure that local issues are not ignored. I am offering a deep-rooted commitment to the people of our constituency. I am proud to rightfully call myself Manx, and proud to share our island with those who have chosen to make it their home. However, the dealings of government over the past few years have dented my pride and undermined many people's confidence. Restoration of confidence is what the electorate expect and what I endeavour to achieve.
Paul Heavey, thank you very much. And finally, we turn to David Talbot.
Thank you, Beth. First of mine. I've lived on the Isle now for some 36 years with my wife, Ravina. We have two children, Shemaine and Nathan. I came to the Isle to work for Walton's Digital World and then for Manx and Overseas PLC when I became part of that group in 1985. From 2000 onwards, I've run my own accountancy business, having practice certificates as a company secretary and an accountant. In 2008, I decided to pass the business on, that year becoming a commissioner for Patrick Parish. As a commissioner, I led two initiatives, creating energy-focused communities and the Big Tidy-Up. I certainly haven't retired. I have repositioned myself, giving myself space to take up this new challenge on my journey into public service. I believe in family and community life. 3 years ago, for example, I started Connect to Charity, a Manx charity that seeks to promote the work of all Islandman charities in conjunction with businesses that provide the sponsorship. If we are to solve our social challenges, it is increasingly necessary and important that government, business and the third sector work together to provide resources to those who are at the coalface who know where to scratch where it's itching. We must never underestimate the value of social capital. Whilst the acquisition and use of money and power are important to sustain the services we've all come to expect, they should never be at the expense of our values and enthusiasms. I've singled out three main manifesto points, holding meetings in the constituency on each of them: our financial future, understanding how we've arrived at our present situation and how we go forward. Secondly, the environment, the appropriate energy policy, the timely operation of renewable energy sources, and thirdly, the restoration of trust. Partnership is the key to our future well-being for the constituency of Michael and for us as a nation. The overarching task of the next government is to ensure that stability, opportunity and fairness are the hallmarks of our achievements. I will seek to work with all groups of goodwill to draw the best of our skills and abilities and to make us proud of our rich
David
and
Talbot.
Unique heritage that is
I'll
the Isle of Man.
I'll stop you there. Thank you very much. Well, as we heard in the introduction, Michael is one of only two constituencies where we know there is going to be a new face, the previous MHKs having retired at the end of the last administration. So I just want to identify, first of all, the main reasons why you all feel you'll be a suitable replacement. Now, Alfred Cannon, you've spoken in your manifesto on Manx Radio before and just in your introduction now about your family having a long tradition in public service, your father, your grandfather and great-grandfather all serving in the legislature in some capacity. But it's not a birthright, is it?
It's certainly not a birthright, Beth. And as I emphasised, although The tradition and history behind it is important, are important values to me. It is my experience of life, my experience of business, my knowledge of the community and my knowledge of the island that is driving me forward here. Over the last 5 years, we have watched a government act like startled rabbits in the headlights. And from my own personal motivation, I now believe I can contribute to government. I'm ready to stand forward and step back from my business. And I want to provide firm leadership and clear direction to achieve the goals that we need to do in order to put the island back on course.
Your father, David Cannon, a very prominent MHK with some very strong political views. You said you agree with some of those, but not all of them. Where does your political point of view differ?
We, at the moment, are facing a completely different situation. Over the last 25 years, the island has undergone substantial growth and we've enjoyed some very, very good times. A lot of that, however, has been based on the fact that we've had substantial income from VAT. That situation has now changed and changed dramatically, as has the global economic situation. The island is facing now substantial challenges going forward, completely different to the times than when my father has been serving. So my views and my take on how the island should now go forward will now be my own and my own only.
How much involvement does he have in your election campaign?
My father has no involvement in my election campaign. He is obviously a voice of wisdom for me to refer to occasionally from time to time, but I have been conducting this campaign myself. I have a valuable team behind me, a team who I've been relying on in many areas to help me and guide me through. The people of Balaf, Kirkmichael and Jerby, a team together, and I have been leading that team to take us forward.
Paul Heavey, I'm interested in something you said during your mandate interview when you were asked why you hadn't decided to try for the commissioners to gain some political experience. You said, and I quote, "I could say I didn't want to be tainted by local politics." What exactly did you mean by that?
I suppose it's a general perception of the local commissioners. They do a valuable job, but they get even less credit than MHKs do for doing their job. I didn't want to get involved with them without having a go at this first. I'm not ruling out if I'm unsuccessful, I might just become a commissioner.
In your introductory letter to the constituents, you talked about the people of Michael being best served by Manx-born lifelong resident. Again, you made reference to that in your introduction just now. Do you have a problem with those who haven't been born over here standing to become MHKs?
No, not at all. I was looking to appeal to those people who do believe that a Manx person is perhaps the best man for the job. And you've not got to forget that there are about 50% of us who are still Manx, and quite a few of us feel quite strongly about it, whether you choose to agree with that or not. It's still relevant.
David Talbot, what's your view on that?
Well, I think Paul's quite right in the sense that there are probably now much more than 50%, probably towards 6% of people living here weren't actually born here, and therefore they need a voice to be heard. They contribute an enormous amount to our prosperity here on the island. So I think that it's somewhat ingenuous to refer to people outside the island who haven't got anything to actually contribute at all. I think they've inputted an enormous amount of good things to the island and continue to do so.
I also imagine you have a slightly different view about the local authority route into national politics. You, until recently, the chair of Patrick Commissioners.
Yeah, I think serving your apprenticeship, as people often refer to this, has proved to be an extremely valuable area because you do have to relate to other local authorities.
This will be your first election, though, won't it? You were unelected at the last one, the local one. Correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't actually stand for election.
I did stand for election. I did stand for election. At the last minute, the sixth person actually withdrew from the candidature. But, I mean, in terms of the question that you asked me, I think that actually serving as a commissioner, you do actually learn an awful lot, whether you actually, in fact, you had to face an electorate or not. That's quite irrelevant. The point is you do actually learn how to relate to your constituents and you do learn how to relate to your MHKs.
You actually live in Glenfaber. Why didn't you stand there?
Well, I didn't stand in Glenfaber because of friendship with the existing MHK member. Behind that is normally the question, understanding local issues. I think issues can be learnt. I think you bring experience and knowledge with you.
You also say in your manifesto that people see you as having an open mind. Now, it is well known that you're a Christian, so how would you deal with matters where perhaps your religious leanings might persuade you in one particular direction?
I think that you have to allow what feeds your mind to actually look at that carefully and let it inform how you actually go forward. It doesn't really matter whether you're a Buddhist or an Islamist or whatever. It's whatever actually informs your mind, whatever your actual output is. That's the big thing. What is your output? Not necessarily what books you read.
OK, well, let's look at a local issue now facing the constituency of Michael, one very much in the news at the moment, and that's the development, especially in Kirkmichael itself. Plans submitted for the new housing development. Heritage Homes wants to build 100 new houses on land at the back of Michael Primary School. There's an agreement in place between the Department of Education and the developer about land for access. Alfred Cannon, you're holding a public meeting about this. It's clear some residents aren't happy. If elected, what are you going to do about it?
Well, let me just be very clear why I'm holding a public meeting. During the course of my canvassing, a number of residents in Kirkmichael have expressed very serious concerns about the development. Twice now, the village has, at public meetings, voted against this development taking place. This seems to have been ignored by the government. A deal has been signed in the absence of any political representation. This was signed on the 19th of August, or at least publicised on the 19th of August, the day after Kirkmichael was left without any form of political leadership. I think the manner in which that has been undertaken is appalling. I think it is a slight on the people of Kirkmichael, and this matter should at least have been held until a new MHK had been appointed and there was proper and effective representation there.
But it wasn't a surprise that that this was going to happen at some point, because that land has been zoned for development.
You are correct. In the last Kirkmichael plan and from time before that, that land has been zoned for development. However, in 2006, both the commissioners and Tim Ward agreed that there would be a conservation area put in place. That conservation area extends through where the development is proposed, down through around Douglas Road corner and back through the village. Now, Tim Wald agreed this, and then seemingly in 2011, Mr. Tier sees fit to sign an agreement which goes against the wishes of Tim Wald in 2006. So, you can't have it always. In this particular case, it would appear that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing.
There are many concerns about this. I mean, certainly one centres on the provision of services in the village to sustain any more residents. A doctor's surgery, something you all want to see. The reality is, though, with regard to that, that an option was put on the table with regard to using part of the school as a GP surgery. That was rejected. It might not have been exactly what the residents wanted, but if they wanted to see a GP surgery at all, surely they should have just jumped at the chance.
Beth, I've not heard of anything more ridiculous than citing a GP surgery in a school full of children and expecting people to walk in and out of a school playground with children around to attend a doctor's surgery. So that is, quite frankly, the most ridiculous idea that has come from this government.
Where should a doctor's surgery go then?
It's almost as ridiculous as building a £1.6 million doctor's surgery in Jerby. Frankly, it's twice as big and twice as expensive as it should ever need to be. So I would take the view that maybe we should have spread the budget, and we should have seen something in Kirkmichael as well.
Where would you have put a doctor's surgery in Kirkmichael?
Oh, very, very controversially, I would like to have seen a doctor's surgery developed between the Isle of Man Bank and Michael Car Centre. I actually see that car park as being misused. It's full of abandoned cars at the best of times. I'd like to see a new construction there. It's on a bus route, it's in the heart of the village, and it would have hopefully, with the remaining car park, maintained that car park.
David Talbot?
I think there have been genuine concerns, just going back to the development in the village, concerns about traffic, concerns about the view that will be spoilt, concerns about the agricultural usage that the land could be, in fact, put to. I mean, there are planning obstacles as well. I mean, the 1994 village plan does quite definitely say it is residential, as you pointed out. The 2006 plan, however, does in actual fact indicate the island strategy that there's a minimum number of houses that can be built in the west of the island. In the whole of the island, the west of the island, about 1,000. Well, we're already well up to that. So that's an issue that has to be overcome. And also there is the issue whether that particular area of land around the player field is in actual fact earmarked for conservation. And that's an issue which needs to be addressed as well. So there are considerable obstacles to overcome. However, having said that, you have to balance that with the sustainability of the village. What do we see the village looking like in a year or two's time?
I'm interested, Paul Heavey, in your manifesto you give a pretty strong commitment, this in your Manx Radio questionnaire, if I remember rightly, actually, that you'd ensure no large residential development would happen until proper sewerage, road, public transport and public service infrastructure was in place. I mean, how much power do you think an MHK actually has?
Well, I would like to think we've got enough to slightly influence people. But basically, I think it's hard to justify a large-scale development unless this infrastructure is in place. It's absolutely essential that we've got somewhere for the sewage to go into, and Kirkmichael just doesn't have it. That said, I'm certainly not against development in this area. I've looked at the plans, and surprisingly, I see it as a fairly good plan. And I would hope that this will hopefully bring about development of the village, further expansion, and an improvement to public services and the facilities which we enjoy.
Alfred. So, David, can we just clarify where you're sitting here on this position? Are you for or against this development?
For the sustainability of the village, Alfie.
Are you for or against this development?
Well, this development in itself is not the answer to everything, but this development will, in actual fact, potentially provide into the future. This is a numbers game. At the end of the day, whether it's a doctor's surgery, whether it's increased shopping, we do, in actual fact, need more numbers. The reason why the surgery went to Jerby is because there are insufficient numbers in the area. If you want a surgery in Kirkmichael, we're going to actually have to increase the numbers that are in Kirkmichael.
David, it's not a numbers game. We're talking here about a village. There's nothing to do with a numbers game. This is about how a village develops. And people have been educated at that school with its wide open spaces for many, many years. As Paul correctly points out, the infrastructure in the village is in no way placed to handle that. We are talking here about putting a sewerage treatment works in amongst housing, at the back of housing.
Sorry, David,
can I just finish, please? Sewerage treatment works, temporary or otherwise, in the middle of housing. I've seen the plans, David, I'm sorry. And more than that,
it's not true.
The sewerage treatment plant is temporary there because Balira cannot handle the sewerage at present. And the village has been told time and time and time again that the infrastructure within the village is not capable of handling more houses.
David Talbot.
Okay, well, from the point of view of the plan, which the Arm on Water and Sewerage have put in place, phase one of that plan sees the implementation of a new sewerage treatment plant for the village, exactly where the present one is placed. And that will happen somewhere between 2011 and 2016. That is the plan of the authority.
Right, so therefore, 2016, when we've got it in place, let's have a look at building some houses.
Well, correct. That sounds like a good plan. I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't, Isle of Man Water and Sewage shouldn't actually put in place. There's no hurry for this.
Alfred Cannon, that you pledge in your manifesto to support and encourage local retail business to provide a range of quality local produce and key essentials. Now, I think this is something that David said. Surely, if you have a development like that proposed in Kirkmichael, there's going to be much more demand for that.
Well, there is absolutely no clear evidence that increased development in Kirkmichael has brought increased retail facilities.
So why does it need increased retail facilities then?
Well, I am not saying it does need increased retail facilities.
But you pledge in your manifesto to support and encourage local retail business.
Of course I will. The existing retail businesses need full support. And let me just pick up on a point here. Jerby has no shop presently, and the government has failed the community time and time and time again. I will be, if I am elected, pushing the government hard to make sure, we haven't had a decision yet, to make sure that that decision is brought forward as quickly as possible and that Jerby is given the retail facilities that it needs.
And that's what you envisage by the development of what you call a viable and sustainable village at Jerby?
Correct. I mean, let's take this here. On one hand, we have Mr. Tier signing off a £1.8 million surgery development in Jerby, government agreeing to the development of Jerby as a sustainable and viable village. And on the other hand, here we have government signing off plans to basically the access for the developer to get in and build 100 houses in Kirkmichael. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And we see this time and time again. And sorry, can I just finish here one more point? And part of the problem here is there's a complete lack of backbone. Mr. Tier specifically told me, he said, and indeed it's made clear in his letter, to us, I think, which all the candidates probably have seen and received, that the reason he signed that was because the developer was threatening to build right up to the back of the school. Now, of course, the developer's going to threaten to build right right up to the back of the school because they want the access to the land. It's time that our ministers in government started to show a little more backbone when they're put on the negotiating table and they're faced with difficulties.
I just want to move to Jerby, if you pardon the expression. Paul Heavey, you have pretty big plans for Jerby in your manifesto, the airfield in particular. You talk about creating a community of motorsport enthusiasts, giving them low-cost facilities to work there on their cars and bikes. I mean, is that really what they want when they can tinker at home for free?
We've really got to see an expansion of Jerby. We've got to get business and we've got to get the heart and soul back into Jerby. And right across the whole island, we've got a great passion for motorsport. We're actually a motorsport centre, a mecca, if you like, to motorbikers. So why not take this and focus it on Jerby? Jerby is a great place for development. Here we are arguing about potentially overdevelopment of Kirkmichael, when really, up in Jerby, they're worried about underdevelopment.
David Talbot?
Well, I think Jerby has been underdeveloped for quite some considerable amount of time. Lots of money, however, has been put into the place, but they're seeing the loss of their football club, they've seen the loss of their shop, they've seen a loss of a number of assets in the past, which have been a great encouragement to community.
They are getting a doctor's surgery,
then. They've got a doctor's surgery, which they can now make full use of in terms of the community side of that life. Okay, was it right or was it wrong? It doesn't matter now, it's done. The point of the matter is we've got to make full use of that surgery. The community needs to grab hold of that because one half of the ground floor is in actual fact available for community use. Also, we can see that with the potential of the shop, there are at least 10 expressions of interest, according to a news report, for that shop. That will actually, in fact, be a magnet to the whole of the north of the island if a good retailer gets in there.
Alfred Cannon?
Let's just be clear on this surgery issue. That surgery has been put up at £1.6 million with absolutely no business plan. I have asked and directly spoken to a representative from the Health Directorate, at Civil Service, who has specifically told me when I asked what the footfall would be through that surgery, he replied that we would have to see how it developed. Now, that is not the way to invest £1.6 million worth of taxpayers' money. So there's no planning's gone into this whatsoever or no foresight. The second point is, if the government had bothered to listen to the people of Jerby, they would have told the government that what they wanted was a focal point for the community, either a pub or a community centre stroke pub, which would allow them to start to have a focal point for them to gather and to discuss matters.
The fact is, though, again, once again, we are where we are. And it's interesting, really, that during this conversation, we're really focusing on the local issues for the constituency, which I don't think has necessarily happened as much in previous debates. I mean, why is that? Is Michael really focused on the local?
Well, Beth, to be fair, you've asked the question about local matters, and that's why we're talking about it. I mean, I'd much rather be discussing a mixture of both national and local matters.
But it is interesting, though, again, while you all make reference in your manifestos about the VAT situation, none of you do seem to focus on it in the way that other candidates have. Why is that?
I don't know. I think that we're waiting for all the information to come through. It's far too early to preempt what we're going to receive and how we're going to react.
But we know roughly what the figures are now. We know roughly what we're going to have to work with.
Well,
so
roughly is not really cutting it, is it? I think we need to see a little bit more information. In fact, I'm hoping that in the next Timbald we'll see a working party to actually get to the bottom of this, to investigate all the possibilities. I want to see what our total VAT receipts are, and I want to closely examine the possibility of leaving this agreement. I believe financial independence could be a real opportunity.
Paul, sorry.
I think that the key issue here is, as most candidates have mentioned, is actually to look at the expenditure and try and increase the income. But the underlying issue is to look at our whole relationship with the United Kingdom. For a long time now, we've debated issues in the last 40 years, we've looked at what it's like to, in actual fact, terminate the agreement. In 1976, the Allemand government commissioned a report which actually recommended termination. So it's interesting to reflect what would have happened had we, in actual fact, terminated that agreement. Well, two things would have happened. First of all, we wouldn't have had the cash for some of these ridiculous capital expenditure that we've had. Although it's been useful, it's helped us develop the infrastructure. But on the other hand, there has been some huge mistakes made with regard to, and we touched on one of them, that was sewerage before. Secondly, we need to be looking at what I call the beast in the midst, because in actual fact we've created a huge mammoth government centre employing nearly 9,000 people and an everly increasing rate. I mean, the last thing that Timbald did was actually to appoint or give permission for the appointment of 10 new social workers.
Sorry, can I pick up here, Beth? I mean, this talk of abrogation, which will probably lead directly to independence, is completely misleading.
No, that's totally wrong.
No, it's
totally
completely misleading. If you abrogate that agreement, you will...
Just one at a time,
if
please.
If you abrogate that agreement, the island man will be left isolated and will probably then have to start moving down the road to independence. Furthermore, the UK is our main trading partner. We will lose our customs relationship with the UK, and we are bound to lose other benefits because the UK will not be prepared.
Sorry, Paul. Is this necessarily a bad thing?
Yes, it is. How do you think the Isle of Man can survive? We have no mineral wealth. I didn't realise there was diamonds under North Barul or gold being mined from the Poolvash Carry. Poolvash Quarry.
I believe there was gold.
We have no mineral wealth. We don't have... the GDP or the economics behind us.
Widen your horizons.
Sorry, Paul. We do not have. This is very, very important. It's not a question of semantics or dreaming about independence. We're not in that situation. In case you hadn't realised, there's a worldwide global economic crisis. This is not the time for us to be talking about abrogating declaring independent unless we have the full facts on the table. And quite frankly, this is years away. And what we really need to focus on now is getting ourselves, cutting our cloth accordingly, getting a firm plan in place and providing the clear leadership in order to carry it out.
Well, you're listening to Manx Radio's election constituency debate. We'll be back in a couple of moments.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Welcome back. You're listening to Manx Radio's election constituency debate. I'm Beth Espy, today talking to the three candidates standing for election in Michael. They are Alfred Cannon, Paul Heavey and David Talbot. Now, before the break, we were talking about the VAT situation and possible abrogation from the United Kingdom. Certainly a difference of opinion among the candidates about this. Paul Heavey, David Talbot, you both actually favour the idea of independence from the UK, it seems, when asked about it in the political questionnaire. David Talbot.
Can I just qualify that? The important thing is that everybody's asking for investigation into expense and income. Budgets have actually been prepared now for 2012-13, and they're being argued out in terms of what's going to be added and what's probably going to be excluded. The important inquiry we need to look at, and what all MHKs should have available to them, is a fact sheet which explains the pros and cons of terminating the agreement. Terminating the agreement would involve probably a 10-year period to thoroughly investigate all the different relationships that we actually enjoy. It does not mean that we'd pass a decision in Tymball, send a letter to London, and then that's over. It would take a long time. We need to carefully assess what's actually involved with the whole process of winning the prize, and this is the prize to be won, of being able to set our own VAT to suit our own economy, not using a VAT rate for someone else's economy.
Isn't there a danger, though, that we start looking into it? I mean, it's going to be very obvious to the UK that they were starting to look into the pros and cons of it. I mean, how do you think they would view that? Paul Heavey.
I think we should have been looking into it long ago, and I think it should have been something we're keeping an eye on, because, frankly, the way we carried on cooking the books for the past few years, trying to raise our GDP and exploiting the VAT scheme, I think we should have expected this. We should have seen it coming. Surely it was obvious that the UK isn't in the habit of giving money away. They're not going to keep supporting us.
Global situations have changed, though, and if you consider the Isle of Man's position, we're not in a bad position if you speak to certain people.
Even
considering our finances,
£1.4 billion
in reserves. Mm.
£1.66 billion. But let's be very clear on that. Beth, I mean, we've heard a lot coming out from these debates about the figures, and a lot of it has been absolute drivel. There's £1.6 billion in reserves, but the actual cash reserves are at about £380 million, according to the last set of government figures. But let's just move on here, because I think what the people of the island actually want to hear is how we as candidates propose to deal with the current situation, rather than engaging in some debate that might take us 10 years to establish.
Well, I mean, you talk about the need for a comprehensive spending review, a review into relationships with the UK and Europe, a review of working practices to make sure that taxpayers are getting value for money. I mean, that's an awful lot of reviewing and not a lot of, if any, immediate action. I mean, that's what the public wants to see.
Well, I have actually stated that the government needs to take immediate action, and I've got a 12-point plan which I will recommend if elected to the next Chief Minister. The key point here is the first piece of immediate action is that once this new government is formed, the ministers must personally sign off all items of public expenditure, which will immediately force ministerial control and accountability and start getting ministers to understand where the money is being spent. In conjunction with that, you will have to undertake a number of reviews, and those reviews will be limited in timescale and will have to act quickly. And amongst that, there will be a comprehensive spending review, a commission to review our relationship with the EU and the UK, and a tax commission to review and recommend the Isle of Man tax policy to include recommendations for the establishment of a tax on UK retail businesses, Marks and Spencer's, B&Q and Tesco.
You talk about the fact that you'd like to make department chief executives and ministers accountable for every pound and penny spent. I mean, how can you really, though, make them any more accountable than they are at the moment? Isn't that micromanagement?
It's not micromanagement. We have to conduct a substantial turnaround here. Government is under serious scrutiny at the moment. We have to find out how we are going to recover £175 million. Now, I am advocating a balanced approach to that. We can't just go in and slash and burn because we will cause untold social and economic problems on the island. But what we also have to bear in mind, and we have to bear in mind and we have to consider this as urgent, is the fact that inflation on the Isle of Man is running at 7%. You have a global economic crisis. You have Portugal, Ireland, Greece and Spain on the verge of default. And the American situation is of serious concern. The alarm bells are ringing and there's going to have to be action, and we must learn our lessons here.
Paul Heavey, I mean, at a time when the majority of election candidates are advocating a reduction in what government provides, I mean, you seem to think government should be taking on more roles. I mean, your manifesto talks about government taking on mortgage provision, buying personal debt, making funds available from government reserves to finance small businesses, government providing basic vehicle insurance. I mean, surely that just completely flies in the face of the belief that government functions should be more restricted.
Well, incredibly, it's about turning the government around into a business. It's about making them supply services which can raise revenue to the public.
No,
you don't agree with that. No, I don't suppose you would. Well, if we're looking at lots of job losses from the public sector, shouldn't we be looking at redeploying some of those skills into new areas of government, areas where we can actually...
Paul, all you're talking about is moving one cost centre to another cost centre and costing the taxpayer money. What the taxpayer wants to know here, the whole island appreciates now that we are almost going to have to accept our own austerity measures in order to get through this period. And we are not alone in doing that. We are no different from any other country in the Western world. What we do need to do
the Isle of Man, in case you hadn't noticed. So let's have a look at local issues, local affairs, rather than comparing ourselves to the UK.
David Talbot.
I think the important issue here is what, in actual fact, is government going to be involved in the future? Government, okay, we talk about Isle of Man PLC, but government is not a business. Government is about creating the environment in which business can prosper. The fact that we're actually supposedly reducing the number of jobs, yet we've actually, as I've indicated before, actually increasing the level of jobs that are happening at the moment, plus the fact we seem to be also making government more into a business by, for example, why on earth does the Mananin Centre in Peel need to have a coffee shop when there are 41 eateries already in Peel? So we're actually increasing the size of government, and I can understand the philosophy behind this, because it says, OK, there's 9,000 of us, surely we can actually create services like a conference centre. Let's build our own conference centre. Why should we have
David, I understand that government is not a business, and there are many aspects to government, including caring for the weak and the vulnerable, which will form a fundamental part of government strategy. But at the end of the day, there is only a limited budget. Money is not growing on trees here. The taxpayer knows that. We can all feel the squeeze that's going on now with the fuel prices, food prices, mortgages, deposits that are required. Deposits that are required for houses. What the taxpayer wants to know, we are all, I think, from what people I've spoken to, accepting that there is going to be some pain here. They want to know from government how it's going to be achieved, when it's going to be achieved, and what the plan is.
So what promises are you making then on the doorstep?
I'm not making any promises, Beth, because government, it's not for me to make promises which I can't deliver on, because there's no guarantee. I mean, this is another issue, but there's no guarantee that everything I say will be undertaken by the next government. These are just my recommendations, that government has to carry out a proper comprehensive spending review. It's pointless just going in and saying we've got to slash across all areas. We have to understand the impact of that.
But things like this have been ongoing, though. Things like this have been happening. I don't think people in Treasury have just been sat there just...
Beth, the communication from government has been extremely poor. The man and woman on the street do not know where we are going at present. The government says it is reducing costs, and yes, you get all these bits and pieces from government about how certain departments are reducing costs, but there's no clear evidence of that. And more to the point, it's not being done quickly enough, and there is no clear and focal point for this, for these cuts. What government has to do is they've got to do a comprehensive spending review, they've got to lay that out in black and white, and then they've got to provide a plan around that to achieve it.
Paul Heavey?
Frankly, I think you've lost the plot. We've got to look at raising money, never mind cutting money. Yes, obviously the two have got to meet halfway. You can't expect...
So how are you going to raise more money then?
Well, frankly, it's the money which goes off-island. We're spending money off-island. Now, you guys are from the UK, so I don't suppose you mind money going off the island to the UK.
Excuse me, Paul, I'm not from the UK.
You are from the UK. We'll not get into that debate. Don't pretend you're not.
Paul, I have 150 years' worth of family history in Cokemarket. But never mind, you carry on.
That's very admirable. But let's take a look at, for example, I mentioned car insurance. Car insurance, the average person is paying about £500 a year for car insurance. If you look at comprehensive, it's more. If you look at the younger people and the older people, they're affected by it. This is money which can't be spent locally unless you count a little bit of commission by a few local brokers.
But what you're talking about, it seems, is that government really should be responsible for everything. You can't take on such huge liabilities when we can't afford it at the moment.
It's a profit-making business which we're basically sending all our money off-island. We can offer low-cost locally. We have the means to do it.
Do we have the means to do it?
Of course we do. We have a government. We have our own legal framework.
I think we're falling into the trap of assuming that government can do anything here. As I said before, government creates
can-do attitude.
Government creates the environment in which businesses, in which families, communities can prosper. It's not the role of government to set up businesses and to actually run them. We've got to reduce the size of government. That's
so
the most
how do
important
we do that,
thing.
Then?
That. Well, we look at all the services that we're providing, for example, and can we, in actual fact, put those services in a much better shape? Well, look at the MEA, look at the Water Authority, look at the Post Office, look at these various businesses, effectively, that we're involved in. The 2006 strategy and scope document gave us plenty of clues of what we could, in fact, be doing. That document needs to be looked at again and very closely scrutinised. The last government barely touched it at all, apart from a last-minute reorganisation of departments.
Alfred Cannon, the scope and structure of government report's just been mentioned there, but you would seem to fundamentally disagree with one of the report's recommendations and one that was actually implemented, and that was namely number 29, I think, about the creation of a Department of Economic Development incorporating tourism responsibilities of the Department of Tourism and Leisure, yet you want to see a Department of Tourism reinstated in its own right.
I think the reason why I've said that is because tourism has just been consigned to the waste paper basket, and as an island we need to have as much diversity in our income as possible, and in my view, the Isle of Man still offers key tourism attractions that must be capitalised upon. But the key point here is that, you know, David's talking about sort of reviewing this and reviewing that.
No, you're the one who says review.
One at a time.
No, you're talking about going back to the scope and structure of government and reviewing that whole process.
No, we should look at the scope and structure of government because...
You also say that, though, Alfred Cannon.
We should look at the scope and strategy because within that document it gave clear guidelines as how we could, in actual fact, have a proper debate about how we manage our national
the
assets.
The key point about
that's
this.
That's the important thing.
The key
thing.
Point about this, David,
and we can reduce the size of government.
The key point about this, David, is that the government has to work fast and it has to work quickly. We have not got the time to spend going back over old reports, debating them endlessly. Tinwald has to make
but you
some
want
decision.
To,
sorry,
to make no, a whole load of new reports.
I want a comprehensive spending review, Beth,
Alf,
and I
said,
do because
Alf,
that is
please,
the basis
you said
on
review,
which
review.
That yes,
the whole,
but David,
we
the
can't keep on reviewing things. We've got to actually take some clear, decisive action. The clear, decisive
thank you, David,
action
which
that's
is exactly
required
what I am
is that
saying.
We need to reduce the size of government. That's what we ought to be doing.
Correct.
Government should not be a business. Business should, in actual fact, be done by
and how are
by
you
private,
going to do that
by private business.
How are you
also,
going to do that?
Well, the businesses are already taking far more interest in what's happening in government. The third sector has been having things dumped on it which government can no longer control. So we have, in actual fact, got to look at how we can actually work together between government, the private sector and the third sector to achieve some of these big social problems, and also to see how we can, in actual fact, spread out the enormous weight that we've placed upon our own government instead of actually putting it into the hands of those people who are ready to take it on.
Yes, David, by the time you've finished all that, the financial crisis will have come, will be floundering here on the Isle of Man as our VAT income is reduced again. We need firm action. We need a decisive plan. I have 12 key points here. Yes, there are some reviews in those, but those reviews are to be undertaken quickly and concisely. They're not for Tinwell to debate. They are for reviews that are undertaken by external commissions to be presented to Tinwell within 2 to 3 months.
But surely then Tinwell needs the power to debate those, and then that's how the public's going to learn about them.
It is time for the Council of Ministers to show some proper responsibility, because let's face it, the Council of Ministers has been appointed to provide leadership. So far they've failed to do that. The Chief Minister, whoever he or she may be, must draw up a clear strategy in conjunction with senior civil servants and trusted advisers, and that strategy must be implemented, and implemented quickly.
I just want to talk about the notion of diversification. I mean, David Talbot, you've said that diversification is the backbone of the island's prosperity, but it's a sensible way forward, not at the cost of values and enthusiasms. Again, something you highlighted in your introduction today. Mm. Can you just explain to me what you mean by that?
Well, values and enthusiasms are those things that drive us, those things that get us up out of bed in the morning. I mean, the three things which are most important here are the things that I mentioned in my introduction, really, that in actual fact we've got a situation where we're providing a stable background in which we can prosper. There's opportunity for all, for education, for health, for business, and as a nation we operate fairly and everybody gets a fair crack of the whip. Those are the sorts of things and values that we must emphasise. We can't bring in business, new venture. For example, I'm going to give an example of that. Department of Economic and Development brought forward an idea whereby wealthy people could in actual fact obtain quick planning. Now, that was a ridiculous idea. That was at the expense of our values. That, unfortunately, did not get through.
David, I'll tell you what values the people of the Isle of Man want. They want a Manx government that is open, accountable and responsible. And they're the three core values that the people want, because at the moment they're not getting it and they want to see it.
I think we're all clear on the fact that we need a Freedom of Information Act. We need to actually have more visible government, more accountable government, and the sharing of information. As we begin to share, then there'll be a lack of trust. There's a huge amount of cynicism out there. Most people, in actual fact, a lot of people who we talk to won't consider even voting for any candidate because they just feel it's a total waste of time. We've got to reverse
Paul
that
Levy.
To bring some trust into the situation.
I'm a little bit concerned, really, that we need to even have legislation for freedom of information. If we were an open government and transparent, like the last government keeps referring to their transparency, we shouldn't need legislation.
But 85 countries around the world have got legislation for
exactly,
this.
But let's face it, they haven't delivered on the transparency. So therefore...
Give me an example of that.
Well, when I look at financial figures, they're not very detailed. And when you start looking into things like, dare I mention, the film industry, it starts to become real muddy waters. So I think a little bit more honesty, never mind transparency. And if it takes legislation to do it, we should have it.
I just want to talk about something in your manifesto, Paul. Your mantra is, I won't lie to you, I won't let you down, I am a friend you can rely on. But I mean, you're going to have, if you're elected, more than 2,000 people to represent. There aren't going to be times when you can't deliver everything or what's asked of you goes against your own personal view. How do you handle that?
Let me tell you, Beth, when we sat down and we started thinking about corny slogans, that's the one we came up with. And I've got to explain why. A friend you can rely on. We haven't had many friends in the House of Keys, and you sure as heck can't rely on them. So it's something new to the House of Keys. And that's as simple as that.
I mean, Alfred Cannon, you also make reference to the fact that if elected, you'd listen to the community concerns and act appropriately according to the majority view. But what if that majority view doesn't sit comfortably with your own?
Beth, I will always act in the interests of the community. I've said at the beginning of this, there will be some very tough decisions to make. I think it is important. And what the community want is they accept there's going to be tough decisions to make. They accept those tough decisions might even come from me if I was elected. but they want openness and they want communication and they want accountability.
We're approaching the end of the programme. I just quickly want to touch on the idea of legislative reform and particular reference to the Legislative Council. You've all said in your political questionnaires that you'd be in favour of a popularly elected Legislative Council, but David Talbot, that didn't bother you very much last year when you stood for a candidate to LegCo.
I think the important thing, what's happened, is that this huge mistrust that has come in about the abuse of the system which has taken place, whereby it just seems sometimes that the Chief Minister can have a word with his close colleagues, maybe two or three of them, who listened to an idea he's had over the weekend. He persuades Keys to actually accept it because he's got the block vote in favour of him, and there's very little scrutiny
in the
Legislative
Council.
I reiterate, though,
that didn't bother you last year when you stood for election to LegCo. Otherwise, you wouldn't have stood, would you?
No, I wouldn't have stood, but that's an opportunity that came along my way. I was asked by my MHK to consider my name going forward, so I was quite happy to do that.
Which is exactly what is wrong with the system. It is a buddy-buddy system. It is past its sell-by date, and the Legislative Council has to be reformed, at the very least public votes. But as far as I can see, there is absolutely no value in the MLCs at the moment, and government has to seriously consider disbanding the MLCs.
You also believe, Alfred Cannon, that the island's chief minister should be popularly elected. That matter was debated in May, I think, in Tynwald. I mean, if there'd been the public will for that to happen, MHKs would have voted for it if that's been the will of their electorate.
Whatever the situation, in my personal opinion, and from many other people's opinion, as it stands at the moment, the electorate has no say how on what policies the new government is going to form or what direction it is going to take. With the public election of a chief minister, there at least would be policies laid down on the table by those individuals who are standing, and the electorate could ask their candidates which chief minister and what policies they were going to support.
Very quickly, Paul Heavey, why wouldn't that work?
Because Cannon said so. I can't
David
get a better
Talbot.
Answer than that.
I think the most important thing here, it is a ridiculous thing to say that we can do without a revising chamber. We must have a revising chamber made up of people who are capable of actually looking at the legislation and making recommendations.
OK, well, that brings us to the end of the programme. Just very briefly, each of you, starting with Alfred Cannon, outline why you deserve the vote.
As I said at the beginning, during the course of my campaign, many people have raised serious concerns about the economy, the increasing cost of living and the underperformance of national government. If the electorate want a Manx candidate with international experience, want leadership direction and a fresh dynamic approach, then I
Paul
ask
Heavey.
You to vote for Cannon.
I'm a hard-working local man who's honest, and please give me a vote.
I'm available. I'll recommend that we have surgeries in the constituency. I'm passionate about public services, and I've got an auditable track record. I'm a people person.
Thank
I look
you.
Forward to serving the people of Michael.
Thank you to each of the candidates, from Michael, Alfred Cannon, Paul Heavey and David Talbot. The producers of today's programme are Mark Tiley and Catherine Nicol. Roger Watterson's going to be back on Monday with the candidates from Middle, and I'll be here on Tuesday with the six standing in Onchan. If you'd like any more information about the election, you can visit Manx Radio's dedicated website, election.manxradio.com. Until next time, goodbye.